Hey guys, it's Jess. I want to pop on and talk about a model, the CPS model about addressing difficult behaviors because it's been coming up a lot recently. I know in a couple of mentor meetings in the last couple of weeks it's come up, and in interviews it's been coming up, and in a lot of parent discussions it's been coming up. So I wanted to record a quick overview for those of you who I haven't already discussed it with. Or maybe some of you who just want to listen again about it. It's been a really huge perspective shift for me personally, and both in my practice actually, and just with working with my own daughter. A lot of the components of this protocol or this model, we already use a lot of, but I'm finding the more I dig into it, the more I'm learning and the more my perspective has been changing. And how I work with kids and address behavior and regulation, and especially our explosive kids or our kids who shut down and get really dysregulated. So I wanted to share some of that information with you all. I want to also point you out to a couple of resources if you want to learn more about this as well. So the CPS model, terrible name. I don't know. They really need to change the name, I think, but it was started by Dr. Ross Green. He is, I believe, a psychologist. And it stands for Collaborative Proactive Solutions. I guess CPS, we're not going to forget that because that always makes me think Child Protective Services. But the basic premise of it is that kids do well when they can. So many of our kids have behavior issues because they have lagging skills, and it impacts their ability to do well and do it consistently. And isn't that always the key? I cannot think like, count how many times I've had parents say, "I know you can do this. Why are you acting like this?" But you know what? In that moment, they can't because they aren't. To be able to do something consistently requires that we can do it in various states of regulation, dysregulated, well-regulated, overly excited, angry. So we have to be able to do all of these skills. We have to be able to interact socially. We have to manage our emotions. We have to execute motor tasks, pay attention, listen to directions, be flexible, keep a calm body, think before we act, express our thoughts verbally, ask, do things before just jumping to them, interpret social cues, tolerate changes in routine and expectation, all while we are in various states of regulation, and we have to be able to do that consistently. So it's important to be compassionate and trust that kids will do well when they can, and that we have to also believe the underlying belief that they'd want to do well, they just can't. So the behaviors that are stemming from, that are, popping up from this might be silliness, might be avoidance, might be really deliberate avoidance, right? Because it feels yucky to do badly and to disappoint people. But we have to trust that they really do want to do well, but they just can't in this moment. And we have to remember that behavior is communication. Often a meltdown is a sign that there are just big emotions taking over a tiny body that doesn't have the skills to control it, even if they know better. And I think that's another huge thing I've been really trying to reiterate to parents lately is separating cognitive knowledge from application. There are lots of things that I know on a cognitive level, and I still cannot execute them. I even like with DIR floor time stuff, I know the theories behind it back and forth. I can talk to you about it, but that doesn't mean that I'm consistent in applying that model or applying it successfully all the time. So even if we know better at a cognitive level, that doesn't mean that we have the ability to execute it because it requires so many skills to do it correctly in the moment and consistently across a variety of situations. The other big premise with this model is that consequences don't work. And I think I sent out an email a while back, this beautiful post that I found on a Facebook group that's dedicated to this model, talking about how consequences don't work. And I thought that was really eye-opening because really up until that point, and I'm probably still am guilty of this, I still have used both imposed consequences to a lesser degree probably, but also natural consequences for kids, hoping that that would shape their behavior. But the premise behind this model is that our children who have challenges and these lagging skills, they've already been encountering consequences, both natural and adult imposed, day after day after day, likely for years, and yet they continue to struggle and have behaviors because consequences don't work. And especially with our explosive, very dysregulated kids, they don't work because they're not teaching skills. So if we take that same concept and we think about it from a motor standpoint, you know, if a child we're working with didn't have hand-eye coordination to throw a ball, would we expect him to make a basket? More importantly than that, would we punish him if he couldn't make a basket each time he tried? Or for not wanting to try because it was hard, right? We would be empathetic, and we knew in that moment we also would practice skills to help him reach that goal. And skills related to flexibility, emotion, social skills, these are all similar to motor skills in the sense that they do have to be taught and practiced until the child succeeds, which can take a very long time, and it can take much, much longer than kids on a typical developmental trajectory, right? So our kids who are explosive, dysregulated, they have a whole different timeline of when they're going to reach these skills. And one of, I think, the common concerns parents often report when they have a difficult child is they worry, what is this kid going to be like when they're an adult, when they're bigger, when the consequences are imposed by the law, or really big social ramifications from their actions? But we have a long time before we get there. So trust in the process and know that you're building skills and dedicate yourself to building skills with these kids so that they can reach those goals by adulthood. But know that it might take longer than their typical peers. So there are three behavior type approaches, they call them plans, in this model. Plan A are adult-imposed expectations. They don't involve the child. It usually involves some type of reward or consequence. Again, this could be natural or adult-imposed. And the goal with this model is that we don't want to use Plan A. Plan A is focusing on compliance. And we know from all our work with DIR floor time, teaching compliance is not the same as teaching them skills and self-regulation. And really, our world is not revolved around compliance. Really, much of our world is revolved around collaboration, negotiation, problem-solving, self-regulation. So I always think back in my mind of, you know, some of the things I have imposed on children in the past, would I have imposed that on an adult? Here's an example. For example, I have definitely in the past, and probably am still guilty of this at times, if a child said, but can I please just do one more time? Probably many times I have said, no, I said one more and we're done. And I make a hard limit. I said one and we're done. That means you do not get one more, period. But the emphasis there really is on compliance, not on self-regulation and not on collaboration, negotiation, or even verbalizing concerns and having a discussion. If I take that same example and think about how that would have played out with my husband, imagine, you know, we're trying to go somewhere. And if he were to say to me, just give me 1 second, I just want to finish this up real quick, I would not even hesitate to say, okay, no problem, unless we were like really, 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 really running late and it was like a huge ask. But generally, I would say yeah, because that's a reasonable request. So we really want to set them up for what are the skills they're going to need when they're adults. And what they really are going to need is negotiation, verbalizing their needs, and being able to do that within a regulation context. I'm going to circle back to the plans here. The two plans, let me start back. Plan C is an appropriate approach in this model, not necessarily the goal approach, but still an appropriate one. A Plan C approach is where you remove the adult expectations that are leading to the behavior. So this might be a first step for with a really explosive child because you might be really trying to build trust and repair a relationship. Or you might need to save energy to solve other problems. So it's not a giving in, it's a deliberate choice to eliminate a demand for the time being. And some families have gone as far as Plan C-ing school and saying, you know what, we're going to unschool, we're not doing school, you're just going to hang out at home for a little while because we need to get regulation and trust back on board. But the goal with this model is to eventually get to Plan B, where adults and kids are working together to solve problems so that everybody's happy. And there are three main steps to this, and we could go on, you know, in a lot of depth of this, but I'm going to keep it short. First and most importantly, we need to empathize. Empathize, and do it repeatedly. And then we need to identify the lagging skills and unsolved problems. And this needs to be really, really specific. So like, you know, you're having difficulty getting along with your sister while playing Legos after school, you know, something really specific. And then you're working towards a solution that both parties are happy with and that the solution is realistic. So it's a lot of approaching the child, and this will vary depending on the child's verbal language and cognitive abilities. You know, maybe approaching the child and say, hey, look, I've noticed you've been having a hard time getting along with your sister or playing quietly with your sister or sharing your toys, etc. You make that really specific observation. What's going on with that? What do you think that's all about? And have that conversation about why. And I have lots of examples of this, but like I said, I want this to just be kind of a quick overview. There are tons and tons and tons of resources on this model. In the clinic, I have purchased The Explosive Child by Ross Green. That's a great book. It is floating around probably the Farmington office currently. If you'd like to borrow it, you are more than welcome to borrow it. They also have a website called livesinthebalance.org. They have tons of resources on there, podcasts, handouts, all different things. Probably, though, my favorite so far way that I've learned this model is through a Facebook support group, because I love learning through examples. So if that's kind of your method of learning, you might enjoy this as well too. On Facebook, they have a group called the B Team, and you can request to join it. It's, I would say, mostly parents of explosive children. But the cool thing about this group is that it's not just like a support group where parents are giving you advice. It's actually run by moderators who are highly trained in this model, and they regularly post, and they also use the model, right, with their own kids and in the work that they do, because I think most of them are therapists. They post different things, informational things, you know, reviewing information of the model, and they're also constantly posting comments on other people's posts as well too. And they are identified by, you know, it says that they're a moderator. They have wonderful insight. I have learned so much just from reading the comments on these posts. So check those out. If you want to discuss more, I'm happy to chat. I am also still learning this model, so my caveat is I am a newbie right along with you. But I think this is the future of working in with any kind of behaviors and working on a regulation-based model. It's very client-centered, very well matched with OT, with DIR floor time, with regulation interoception. And I think it's the future. I think behaviorism is heading out the door, and this is what's coming in. So I think it's good for us to be prepared and start practicing this so we can become really skilled in it. If you have any questions, let me know.